officer commissary.
Wasn't it mine?
And towards the end of the war, as people left the ship, at the very end, I was skipper of a ship, but it was in San Francisco. But I was getting out too, but it just, instead of people being, instead of getting new people on board the ship, I was there, the commissioner of the ship in Norfolk. Where was Norfolk?
Virginia.
Commissioned the ship, and they needed it out there in the South Pacific, but it was a minesweeper tender. It wasn't a minesweeper, but I was on minesweepers up in Narragansett Bay, and when I got out of the Navy on July 29th, I think I got out of Chicago July 19th, and they had 10 days to report to the ship. Home for 10 days, you know, near my parents. I think it was at Spring Lake, and then I had to report to the ship up in Rhode Island.
Wow.
Newport, Rhode Island.
Wow.
That was the first assignment. I got assigned to that.
So you had to go out and barter with all the... You called bartering with all the lobstermen to get food for the ship. You would get lobsters and fish.
Yeah, we go down Narragansett Bay every day, no matter what the weather was. We got there July 29th. The weather was beautiful, nice and warm, and we had to put out our. They were afraid the Germans were going to mine that area, so we had to ensure that they had a big tail, electric impulse. And what happened to the minesweepers? They go over the mines. Doesn't hurt the ship because they're so light. And then they have the tail at the end of it with electric impulses that blows up the mines if there were any.
Did you ever see a mine go?
Never did get any mines.
Your ship was wooden? Was it wood or metal?
The minesweeper was wooden.
Really?
So
wooden.
Because a lot of the mines are sense the metal.
Oh right.
So they made the minesweepers out of wood.
Huh. What while you were doing it, what was your feeling about it? You know, I mean, were you feeling a lot of patriotism or what? How did you feel about it emotionally?
We just did what we had to do. What they told us to do. We didn't think of anything.
What?
The crew was all black, and the officers, the three officers on that ship. White.
Oh, interesting.
Did they ever have a mutiny?
In the Navy at that time.
They didn't have a mutiny?
Huh?
Blacks didn't rise up against the whites?
No.
No?
How many people were on the ship?
On the little minesweeper, there weren't many. On the big minesweeper tender, there were about 100. And after they got commissioned in Norfolk, I guess it was, the crew... I was in charge of the commissary getting the food to feed the 100 men.
That's why he likes to cook back here so much.
What's that?
That's why you like this crew kitchen here where you cook in the kitchen.
Well, I don't know if I cook too good.
You do.
But we had a very good...
black chef.
Black chef. He was from a Pullman.
Pullman car?
What was that?
Pullman sleeper?
Yeah, he was a Pullman. He really knew how to cook. And he knew how to order it.
What was his name, do you remember?
What?
Remember his name?
No. But the cooking staff was all black.
Mm-hmm.
What? Cooking staff was black.
And then when the time came, they decided they wanted to send us to the Pacific, so they had a big convoy meet in the Atlantic Ocean, and we were one of it. And it went, and we all had to keep the ship dark because they were afraid of the Germans, you know, blowing up ships, which we never got attacked, but they had to keep it through the Panama Canal.
Yeah.
In convoy, and up the Mexican coast to San Diego, and that's where we ended up on it. And then they sent us out into the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Went to Hawaii. I was in charge of, you know, getting as many supplies on ship as we could to last. I think the potatoes would last 100. That's the, they'd last about 30 days.
That's, you know, a lot of potatoes, wasn't it?
Well, you had to keep the ship. And then we had a locker down below where we kept frozen foods. Mm. And another one, which is just a kind of an icebox thing.
How many potatoes would that be for 30 days?
A lot of potatoes. Yeah. Well, they had a big machine. You put the potatoes in there and turn it around, mm-hmm. and it would skin the potatoes.
Like mashed potatoes?
But what else?
Curly cues.
Boot camp up in Asbury Park before then, they really treated us for guard duty at night. And one of the duties was just to peel onions. So we'd peel onions all day long.
Peel onions all day long.
But that was boot camp.
Huh.
They send you through boot camp before you become
an officer?
An officer, yeah.
So they made you cry with the onions?
Well, you just do the duty.
Yeah.
So how far you got out to Hawaii? Where did you go after Hawaii?
We went to Wake Island, Midway Island. And a wee talk was one of the stops we had.
Did you get seasick?
Only one day did I get seasick in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first day I reported to Rhode Island.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know any better. I ate scrambled eggs and a huge breakfast. And then the ship went out and started bucking the, bucking the swells. I got seasick that one day, but after that, I learned to control it.
Yeah.
Very good.
Wow.
And you said that one ship you were on, that y'all wouldn't follow regulations, and there was one guy that came on and tried to make you all follow the things to the letter.
Yeah.
He gave up.
He eventually gave up and went along. A little like those ships that Kennedy was on.
The PT boats.
What's that? PT boats, they were kind of independent of the regulations of the Navy.
Huh.
Anyway, we eventually ended up in Okinawa. The war was still going on.
Was that before or after the atom bomb?
That's before the atom bomb.
Were you over there when the bomb went off? Or?
Yeah, we were over there. And I was in Hiroshima. 1 month after it went off.
Wow.
Really?
We were assigned to that area to clean out the harbor. But our ship wasn't used to clean it. To get the bombs going, they sent in just a big ship. And the ship was supposed to, you know, get the mines to explode, just be going over them. But it so happened the Japanese never mined anything.
Mm.
We were just there. Could have, but we didn't know.
So you probably got some radiation exposure if you were there a month afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Could have got it. That's why I've been kind of cuckoo ever since.
He's been cuckoo ever since.
then we got orders to report to Tokyo Bay. That was after the bombs went off. And so we went up to Tokyo Bay. That's where they signed. We saw the signing ceremony from our ship. We were very close to
MacArthur and the.
Then Tokyo Bay.
Wow.
And whatever name that, Yokohama, I guess it was. There was a big sign on one of the buildings as we went into the bay. It said, "Welcome, Yankees."
Huh.
The Japanese. We didn't know if they really meant it or not. But a few men from our ship daringly landed way ahead of all the other people, all American landing ships. And we took a train into Tokyo, and there was no hostility from the Japanese.
Oh, really?
They were hostile in the least.
Why weren't they? Why?
Why were they not?
Yeah.
They were starving.
Oh.
The Japanese were starving.
So were they really welcoming the Yankees? When they said welcome Yankees, did they really welcome the Yankees?
They welcomed the Yankees. They were very, very kind to us.
Oh.
And in fact, we had to put out our garbage every day so we could eat in big pails and buckets. And the Japanese themselves would line up just to take that food and eat it. They were just starving.
But this was after the bomb, you said.
Right.
So I don't understand.
It took a long time to get supplies into.
Yes, but they were so starving that they welcomed the Yankees. It's just over starvation.
Well, no, they signed a peace treaty. After within two or three days of the bomb, they signed a peace treaty.
And so that was enough to.
Well, the emperor officially said that they.
But after the bomb,
surrendered.
They decided to surrender.
Right.
I see.
So MacArthur and who was on
that?
Was it MacArthur that was on the ship that? Was it MacArthur on the ship, on the battleship where they signed the treaty in Tokyo Bay?
I guess he was.
I think it was Douglas.
All dressed in white. From our ship, we could see it. We were that close.
Wow.
I think about the war, they have a list of all the ships that were in that bay, and our ship was one of them.
What was the name of your ship?
USS Pickett.
Pickett's Brigade?
Yeah.
Oh, write that down.
And there's a history of your ship that you wrote that Eric found online. It doesn't have Daddy's name on it, but when Eric showed it to Daddy, he said, I wrote this. You know, he had written a history of the ship.
Here's the article on the Wikipedia.
My job is to write down the history of what we
did. Wikipedia. There's more than one ship.
You have a pencil?
Called the Pickett, but if you read the articles, you'll know which one is the right one.
Okay. You have a pen?
I don't have one on me.
I just wanted to write the name of the ship. Got it.
In the Inland Sea of Japan, in between all the islands, and it's the most beautiful country you can imagine.
How much time did you spend on shore?
What's that?
How much time did you get to spend in Japan?
Almost a year.
So you were on shore a lot, or
what's that?
Were you on the ship, or were you on shore during that 1 year?
I was on the ship all the time.
At that point, that 1 year, what was your job during that time?
I was supply officer.
Supply.
You weren't in Japan for a year, were you? Were you in Japan for a year?
I was in the Pacific for a year.
In the Pacific, yeah. So how long in Japan do you think you were?
At least 6 months.
Really? Okay.
And at nighttime, in the day, we take our little landing boat and just walk through the country. We weren't supposed to do that, but
we
just go ahead and did it anyway.
Did you learn any Japanese?
In the back part of Japan is where we trampled, just kind of looked around.
Did you learn any Japanese language? Were you able to communicate?
I'll tell you about that.
Go ahead. We're listening.
We were so educated, the officers and the men, that there were some uneducated people on board the ship. Seamen that had never had much schooling, and they would pick up that language of Japanese so quickly.
Oh.
Uneducated as they were, they were communicating with them, and we who were so educated, we didn't have the capacity to.
Yeah, your brain was all filled up.
Isn't that something? Huh.
Maybe that's why we can't learn new things in the world.
It's part of the rap culture. Rap in different languages.
It's funny for everybody has seen the museum in Fredericksburg.
Oh, yeah.
The Pacific War.
We're talking about the museum in Fredericksburg, the Nimitz Museum. That's where Nimitz grew up.
Yeah, he was the commander of the whole
thing. It's a really
and there's a big World
museum.
War II. Yeah, World War II
where's
museum.
Where's that?
It's about an hour
from
here.
Yeah,
on the East Coast.
No, here.
Here in Texas.
Texas,
North
an
Santa
hour from here.
But what over in Okinawa, before landing in Japan, the war was still going on. We get bombed every night. The Japanese would send planes over. And so as soon as they got overhead, we'd have to go on duty, you know, go to the guns and everything. And but they never targeted the small ships. They were after the big ships, the little ships they went after. But they bombed at the kind of nuisance rate. They try to keep you awake and weigh you down that way. So besides being on duty 8 hours a day, on whatever the deck duty was, we had to stay awake at night, you know. Couldn't get any sleep, and deprived us of sleep at that time. But as soon as the war was over, they quit bombing us anymore. That was nice.
Well, I finally got a good night's sleep.
You used to play poker, didn't you? You played poker
every night. The officers would get together.
And that's why you couldn't sleep. You probably lost all of them.
And we played poker every night.
Mm-hmm. Did you win?
Well, some people won regularly, and some people lost regularly. And I was the kind of person who just was in the middle there. I didn't lose them. And at the end of the trip, they'd settle up. They had poker every night.
So did you have to pay at the end of the trip, or did you get something? Say, did you have to pay up, or did you win?
I was just about even. I didn't lose them.
That's good. Knew when to quit.
But on coming back, finally they sent us back to the United States again. And that was the most dangerous part of the trip for us, because on the trip back, our engines broke down. And so the ship was starting to rock back and forth over the swells of the ocean. And I was afraid that ship was going to capsize. And fortunately, the engineers, the people who worked in the engines, got the thing going again.
Wow.
But I never was on a ship that rocked as much as that ship did.
Wow.
Were you in a convoy, or were you by yourself?
I think we were by ourselves. I don't remember any others.
So you would think they could tow you back if there were some other ships around.
What's that?
You would have think that, if there were other ships in the convoy, they could tow you back to port. But
yeah, isolated.
Wow.
Well, that's quite a story.
Well, that was the experience we had.
But you said you always had really good food, didn't
what?
You? You said you always had really good food on ship.
Yeah,
the cook was really good.
Delicious food.
Huh.
It's not like the people on shore have these sea rations, I guess they had.
Wow. You had real sea rations.
So when the war, when you're, after you were done serving, what happened in your life after that?
Marry that lady.
Is that when you got married, or did you have more education, or?
After that, I kind of had a cuckoo idea that I wanted to go into music.
He was a chemistry major at Brown.
Yeah.
No, physics major.
But you were physics?
Physics is what I got my degree in.
Did you have did you finish your degree before you went into the military, or did you?
Well, I went to Brown. They sent us to what's called V-12. You know what that is? The Navy sent you through school.
Yeah.
And paid your tuition and finished up my schooling in 3 years. And then the officer training school in Chicago counted as the last year. So as soon as I got my commission, I got the degree from Brown University. But I never went to Brown more than 6 semesters.
Oh.
And that was enough to, plus the officer training school, was enough to get the degree.
So you only did six semesters in physics?
Well, I couldn't make up my mind what to major in. 1 year I'd major in chemistry, another year I'd major in biology. I kept switching my major.
Then you switched to music.
And I remember once, before I left the fleet, I said I wanted to, go into music and drop out of school. And you, my father, talked me out of doing that. Not you, your brother.
I did. I said, "Don't do it, Robin."
What, your father, your George, and your father?
Yeah, they got together. And they advised against doing it. So instead of going into the military, I probably would have been in that Normandy invasion if I stayed in the military. But getting into this V-12 program, it was a Navy training.
Good.
So the Normandy invasion happened after all that.
Normandy was 43 or 44.
So if you'd gone into music and when you wanted to first, then you probably would have been drafted. Is that right?
I would have gotten drafted. In the military.
So it was really a good thing, wasn't it?
They did the right thing. Right,
you would have died for your music.
Mm-hmm. I got out of the Navy. June or so.
Of what year was that?
45 or 6.
45?
46.
46.
Oh. And then...
Juilliard?
I decided I wanted to do music, so I applied to Juilliard School. At that time, the only reason I got into Juilliard was they were letting everybody into the school, especially people who served in the military. So I applied for it, and they let me in. Couldn't get in that easily now. And so I started going through Juilliard.
Who did you study with?
I studied with two main teachers. One was Rozanoff. She's, what's her name? That girl?
Leova Ring?
Leova Ring, yeah.
His daughter. A fine pianist who used to live in San Antonio. I think she lives in Austin now. Isn't that right?
Yeah. When I studied with him, he had a room across the street from the school where he liked to teach. And she'd come home from whatever school it was. And she'd come in the apartment. We'd see her then. What's the name of that school?
Vassar?
Something like
was
that.
Was it Vassar?
I think it was.
Because that's where my teacher knew them. Mrs. Consonellenbogen.
Is it Vassar?
I think she used to teach at Vassar. Is that right?
I think so.
And then she knew
them.
Then
she went to Peabody.
Yeah.
But anyway, they let me into the school. And,
who was your other teacher? You said
Leonard Rose.
Leonard Rose, the violist?
No, cellist.
I mean, who was the violist in the quartet?
What's that?
Primrose? Was Primrose the violist? Primrose was the... Leonard Rose, Primrose, and was that the Juilliard String Quartet?
No, that's a different quartet. I was very close to the String Quartet at Juilliard.
Who was in that?
What's that?
Who was in that quartet?
I can almost think of it. I could if I thought began to think of it. Anyway, they were so excited about a new work, the way they had been working on the Bartok String Quartet.
Oh, those were new then, huh? Yeah.
So they'd always invite us to say, "Come, listen to this, the greatest music in the world."
Bartok.
In fact, at Juilliard, I studied with a person by the name of Julius Herbert, and I was in his class. He was a very great teacher. He taught Robert Shaw. Shaw used him for everything. He took, Robert Shaw was very uneducated musically.
Really?
He helped him. And Robert Shaw at that time was assistant conductor of you know who?
Well, Robert Shaw Chorale.
Toscanini.
Oh, Toscanini, huh?
He was what?
He was just talking about a Toscanini.
So Toscanini group. Liked his choral conducting.
And then he ended up in Atlanta, didn't he?
Right.
Robert Charlotte.
I had an offer to go there instead of where we ended up.
We might have grown up in Atlanta.
You're still be Southerners.
And when we were in that congressional orchestra, which I got a job with. After I got out of Juilliard, I had 4 years, and I studied with Bendisky, Tom Bendisky, who was like a father to me.
Well,
as close a person as I could be.
Did you meet Toscanini?
Did I know him?
Yeah.
No.
Did you meet him?
He lived very close to the high school I went to, Horace Mann, in Riverdale, New York. He lived in that part of the country. But I didn't know him.
But now you were at Juilliard, how long before the two of you met?
When we were going to Juilliard, I went to a place called Rochester.
You lived there, right?
We lived there.
But that's not what you really called it. What did you call it? Something.
Rochester.
Rochester.
And at the Rochester, there was this cute little girl from Texas.
What? There was a cute girl from Texas.
In Harlem, we'd meet every week to play string quartets up in this place on 125th Street in Harlem. And it was full of musicians. Ben Jenkins was there, Wayne Barmer.
There's a picture of some of these people that came down to San Antonio about 20 years ago to a reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Masa, was she in that?
Masa Kitagawa was there. Her parents had a hard time. She was Japanese.
Japanese lady. And then got interned, you know, the internment camps.
And they had to sell their good instruments.
What? Masa's family, they're Japanese, so they had to sell their instruments during the war.
Eventually, we got an apartment there. It was in the midst of Harlem, we were right over a bar.
How far from the Apollo?
What?
Were you near the Apollo and all of that stuff?
We were just about a block away from the Apollo.
Wow. So all the black
community. We were so long-haired, we never went to the Apollo Theater.
So you missed out on all the innovation.
What's that?
I say you missed out on all the musical innovation.
Yeah.
Now, Gene Weeks introduced
you. Introduced me to Peggy at the Rochester.
That was Jack Benny's sidekick, wasn't it?
Rochester. Cute little girl from Texas.
What?
You're a cute little girl from Texas.
And they're still friends with her. She lives in California. The lady that introduced them to each other. I bet she'll call you all. Well, she has a birthday coming up in July, doesn't she?
Yeah.
But she introduced them to each other.
But she was singing
in
the chorus in downtown. I think she was an understudy for Ethel Merman.
Huh.
If something happened to Ethel, she would have stepped in.
Would she sing at the, what's that big place where they have those chorus lines?
We should be recording
all this.
What?
No, I don't
remember.
I know.
Radio City, did she sing at Radio City? Is that right? The Rockettes, or did she have something to do with that? Maybe not. Maybe I had that mixed up.
I don't think she sang with them.
Okay.
She might have.
Yeah, Jean Gere.
But she was involved with all that stuff at that time. Peggy and I and Jean were a threesome at that time.
Yeah, we did all that kind of things together.
Well, I like the story about you used to model, right?
Yeah, she had liquid. She had a job modeling in a store.
Tell us,
well, Peggy.
We want to hear your version.
Secondhand.
Well, I'd have to.
I guess she'd have to walk in the window there.
In the window.
And what, you and Jean would be outside trying to make her laugh, right? That's the story I heard.
We had lots of fun.
And you had an apartment where y'all had, were the only ones with a telephone?
The what?
Only ones with a telephone.
Well, after we lived in the column, we found this place that belonged to a dentist. Get his name, I could almost think of it. And they were leaving it, and they let us take over their lease. I think we paid $104 a month at that time.
How many rooms were it?
Yes, by 5.
Wow.
That's so
that's something.
Yeah. We had a lot of fun.
And then we rented out one of the rooms that they had a television set in there.
What?
First television.
They had a television set?
In that.
Yeah.
There was Nina and Tyche, some Greek writers, and he had the television. And when he wasn't there, we'd turn on the TV.
Go in his room, huh?
Yeah.
But you said you used to, like, if people had calls, you'd bang on the pipes to let them know that they had a call or something. Didn't people?
I think that was at
a different place.
125th Street. That building has been torn down, and they have big new apartment buildings there now.
Didn't you have some squirrel or
63 and 65 out of 20th Street?
Didn't you have some squirrel that you tamed and fed that came in your apartment or something like that?
Yeah, in the back window, the squirrels would come into our apartment. Came in through the window. They were kind of friendly squirrels.
So you were in your late 20s then, maybe? How
my
old?
Age?
Yeah.
You got married when you were 26 and 25.
26 and 27, somewhere
year?
Around there.
Well, they got married in 49.
49.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah, we should know that. We were there.
They're both 70 years old. They're both the same age as your marriage. Isn't
that Ted and I. We were born the year you were married.
Well, Robin saw me within 5 weeks of
And I had all kinds of jobs in New York City.
All kind of what?
Jobs.
I worked at 110th Street, the drugstore, as a cashier for quite a while. Some publishing company downtown. Make a little extra money. And of course, the GI Bill paid for all tuition. Juilliard, so I didn't have to pay any of that. Returning veterans had that money paid.
Did I work up there?
Did you work?
You were a model. Didn't you?
You modeled.
Tickets to the movie.
You did other jobs too.
Like
what?
Movie? Did you sell tickets for a movie theater?
What?
Sell tickets at a movie theater? Am I getting that mixed up?
That was in Houston before.
Houston before. Okay.
So what brought you to, so did Texas come after all that?
Yeah, I was studying with Mandinsky. He was a member of the NBC orchestra, and he was like just closer thing than the father to me. I was very close with him. And his wife was a member of Juilliard faculty. I can think of her name sometimes. Through him, I got this job with the Gershwin Orchestra, which is leaving.
Now, who conducted that?
What?
Who conducted that?
Zeller, Z-E-L-L-E-R.
Okay.
I never heard of him after that. And concertmaster of that orchestra was a fellow by the name of Brusilov.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking. That's the connection. Okay.
He was concertmaster of the Gershwin Orchestra. He would leave us every once in a while, leave the orchestra, go play the violin solo. He had an orchestra in Philadelphia, his own. It was his own orchestra, and it was a good orchestra. But anyway, on the trip, we traveled one night stands throughout the United States. One of the towns we went to was a little hick town called San Antonio. I remember staying at a hotel downtown before I ever thought we'd move.
He was in a hotel downtown before he ever knew.
But on that trip, he knew the conductor of the New Orleans Symphony Orchestra. And we went and visited him, and he listened to me play. And he wanted me to join the orchestra, but I said, no, I didn't think I wanted to join that orchestra.
That was the New Orleans one, huh?
Yeah, I would have ended up in New Orleans.
That was what?
In New Orleans.
Oh, there's where you could have been.
We could have been there, yeah. Now, Bruce Aloff is somebody that your parents, you knew him very well, right?
Well, mainly uncle and aunt
in Philadelphia. Well.
Every once in a while, he'd come down and conduct the San Antonio Symphony.
Oh.
And I'd say hello to him.
Who's that? Bruce Aloff.
We were kind of close to each other on that trip. Traveling in the bus.
April, you've got to write all this down.
We all had a piano solo.
It's really wonderful.
It's interesting.
Really, all of it.
Travel to the United States.
We should be recording this.
I know, really.
I can remember traveling these buses every day. Get up in next town. Somebody had that thing mapped out.
And where was Peggy?
Peggy stayed home with a baby.
Oh, you had a baby.
Huh. She used to say, "I'm my cuckoo." That means she wanted mommy to cook some cookies. She's still got some. But April was a very slow learner as far as walking.
She was what?
She didn't get her to walk. And one day she decided she was going to walk, and she just walked perfectly.
I was like 14 months, apparently, before I decided to walk.
Which is okay.
But then I walked okay.
But once she started walking, she just... like she knew exactly what to do.
I had it figured out. I was thinking about it.
Figured it out before you did it, huh?
Yeah.
I don't know where RJ was then. He was living down there.
Oh, I was watching.
He was watching.
Well, that is quite a story.
Quite a good story.
Yes, a very good story.
I made it all up.
He said he made it all up.
Well, I hope you would write it. I hope you would write it down.
Yeah, why don't you write that?
Or
down?
You know, you could record it, and somebody else will write it.
So let's start over again. Start.
that was a rehearsal.
It'll be different the second.
All right. Well, so give us the we'll record it right now.
Huh?
We'll do it again.
Well, it was that was that story.
All right, let's hear it over again.
Who's that going to be? Hello? 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 Well, shame on you.
Now what?
We had a nice party yesterday.
What does Andrew?
Well, thank you. What did you say? How many people get to be married that long?
It's 1 in 10,000.
My daughter says that 1 in 10,000.
0.01%.
Get to stay married that long.
Yeah, marriage is
married for how many years?
Only 1 in 10,000 marriages last 70 years.
That's something.
Well, that's something.
Yeah.
Well, we're barely moving now.
I said we're barely moving.
Well, thank you for calling us. We'll get to see you. We'll come out to see you if you don't see us.
Oh, it's probably Robert.
All right. That's all right. But we have a tentative in our mind to see you.
This retirement's getting pretty busy.
Thanks for doing what you're doing on that house across town. Well, we'll be seeing you. And thanks for calling. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Is that Robert?
Robert.
Yeah, I was supposed to tell you happy anniversary from him.
What's that?
I was supposed to tell you he was sorry he didn't make to the party, you know, but and I forgot to tell you.
But nice of you to go to all the trouble doing all that.
Well, he had worked real hard at our place, and he was just kind of worn out, you know. So
he shouldn't be working anymore.
I know, he works too hard.
You know, of all your
stories.
What?
Go ahead.
No, of all the conductors you've played for, which one did you think was the best?
Kozinski was very good. He conducted the Juilliard Orchestra when I was there at school. He's in Cleveland. He's a good conductor.
Yeah.
Robert Shaw would do sometimes. I could have gotten into that orchestra with him. I didn't. Maybe I should have. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of guest conductors. I can't remember them all.
Yeah.
Well, it is an orchestra, keep changing.
Well, when you gave up the sciences.
When I gave up what?
When you gave up science, in other words, studying at Brown, when you were studying the sciences, you gave that up and went into the service, is that correct? And then went into music. Did you ever regret that? I mean, did you ever look back and miss the science?
Everything I've done.
That's good. You're priceless. You're absolutely priceless.
Precisely?
No, we're enjoying your stories.
You are?
Yes.
I can embellish on it if you like.
Goodness.
Yeah. Peggy was at the conservatory in Houston. She used to go there regularly. And they had a director of that, Mozart Hammond. Remember him, Peggy?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he was a big thing in my life.
And who's the girl who played at our wedding? I couldn't think.
Betty what? Ruth.
What?
Betty Ruth.
Betty Ruth played at our wedding.
Uh-huh.
What?
Betty Ruth played at your wedding.
She's one of the Houston people.
Hmm.
Now she's not alive anymore.
No, she passed on two years ago. Yeah.
She was my teacher in Houston for repertory coaching.
And I remember when we first met, I think within about a minute, we both realized we both knew this lady, you know.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, she was just a real special lady to both of us. It was one of the people we both knew before we knew
wow.
each other. And she had played at their wedding.
Oh, isn't that something?
Yeah, it is.
What's all this?
About Betty Ruth and how special she was to all. Well, she, when you went up to New York the first time, didn't you go up with her on the train with Betty Ruth? I think, and she sort of helped you find a place to stay.
She stayed at a place on 116th Street.
Did Betty Ruth helped her find that,
yeah.
Didn't she? So she kind of helped you when you first went up to New York.
And later on, I helped her, you know, get places like the Rochester.
And didn't you also help her get a piano? Did y'all,
yeah.
Auction, right? Was it an auction for that?
We auditioned, yeah.
But an auction for the piano?
It was a Steinway B. And we got that. We heard about it. And we put in a bid for $600 on the thing. And that's the one we bought to San Antonio.
I think I remember that piano.
That?
I remember that piano.
And somebody wanted it so badly down here, we sold it to them. They wanted a good piano.
And when was?
What's that?
When were she and John married?
What?
Betty Ruth and John, I think, were married a little after you all were. Is that right?
Who was?
Betty Ruth and John Tom Forty. I think they were married a little bit after you all were.
John Tom. Tom Gordy.
Betty Ruth. I'm not sure. It was right around the same time. It was very close.
They met in Houston.
So yeah.
Because he was at Rice.
Yeah. They knew each other in Houston. Yeah.
Didn't she go to Rice for a year or something?
She did go to Rice. I think so. Uh-huh. Betty Ruth did for a year. Year or so.
Anyway, Yuri, who died recently, was playing with the Moscow Symphony when Van Cliburn.
We were just talking about that.
Played.
The winning performance.
Huh?
When he won, right?
After the Tchaikovsky.
And then you played with Van Cliburn. Shortly after that.
Right. He was signed up with San Antonio before he won, and so Alessandro got him to play here at the low rate, you know, before he became famous. And Alessandro was so proud of himself for signing it up, and he didn't have to pay much for him.
Got him cheap.
Huh?
Got him cheap.
Did you play with him after that? Did you play?
I guess he came. I just played in the office.
Yeah, right.
So did Yuri play in the performance that was the winning performance?
Yeah, in Moscow, apparently. Yeah.
Uh-huh. He became famous in Russia. An American could win that.
Yeah. Oh, that was a big deal. Yeah.
That hit the news.
Yeah.
That's the story of my life.
There's got to be more.
There
has to be some more.
Yeah, no, nothing else?
Percy Strauss.
What is he like?
He's a cousin.
Second cousin?
He's a friend of the family. They knew that I was taking up cello. Found me this Knopf cello. And I was but real young, about 8 or 9. The cello was way too large for me. But anyway, he gave that to our family. Later on, I sold it. I didn't like the cello that much. Victor Herbert had the same kind of a cello as that one. It was made by the same maker, local.
A New York maker or what?
What?
It's a New York made cello or what?
New York made, yeah. It is.
No, I was just wondering,
what's that?
Percy Sr. or Percy Jr.?
This is Percy Jr. Percy was the son of Isidore and.
Yeah, Percy Sr.
He was the CEO of Macy's.
Ted knows all the story of the family better than anybody.
He
done a lot of research on all this.
He was the one that took over Macy's. Isidore Strauss and Ida Bloom were the...
The Titanic.
Went down on the Titanic, but Isidore was the CEO of Macy's, so he was a partner with Abraham, who was the founder of both... Abraham and Strauss, which is the Strauss family, and also Macy's.
Well, now that Percy Jr., wasn't he the one? He gave a lot of artwork to Houston. The Houston Museum of Art.
He also was a Strauss Cup at Harvard for the athletic club, cup for all the houses, so it's called the Strauss Cup.
So Jr. was the one that gave the cello?
So Percy Jr. that gave you the cello?
Yes.
Percy Jr.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm not sure there was a Percy. Was there a Percy Senior as well? Or?
Yeah.
So do you still have the cello?
No. But was he the one that died in a balloon accident?
I think so.
In a what?
In a balloon accident. There's a hot air balloon.
Which one? Was Percy Strauss?
I think so. One of those guys.
They don't want to travel with the Strausses. They've got bad luck.
His daughter, Marjorie.
Yeah, they were up in a hot air balloon and it...
That was
30 years,
40,
a long time ago.
Anyway,
Ted knows more about
stuff
than I
do. One of their daughters, one of Percy Strauss's was next door neighbor up in Cambridge. Went over and visited them.
I think it was in 76.
In 76?
And another one of the daughters, Caroline, I'm Facebook friends with him.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
He's Facebook friends with one of the daughters of Percy Jr.
Is what?
He's Facebook friends with one of the daughters of the guy that gave you your cello.
I think it was Percy, but it must have been Percy Sr. because he was a Percy Jr. was an academic.
Okay.
So and then the children of Percy Jr. were next door neighbors in Cambridge, but Percy Sr. was the child of
Isidore and Ina,
and his wife was the daughter of Abraham. So
we saw that park in New York.
For the Strauss family?
The Strauss family park. There's a park named after them.
Right. Now that, and it was a plaque in the store with Abraham and Strauss. With
that park's pretty new, isn't it? I think it's just dedicated in the last few years. Yeah. A nice plaque with a long story about them and benches. It was raining.
It was raining.
Also, the people, I don't know if I got this even closely right, but with the names you're throwing around, were any of them or their relatives in the Titanic?
Yes.
You're right.
Yes.
So Percy Strauss is the child of Isidore Strauss, who was on the Titanic. He was one that gave up his seat on the lifeboat. So a lot of the other wealthy clientele dressed up as women to get on the lifeboats.
Yeah.
But Isidore Strauss gave up his seat on the lifeboat.
And his wife stayed with him.
And so the captain said, "You get on the lifeboat with your wife." And he said, "Well, I'm a gentleman. I'm not going to go on the lifeboat." And when he said he wasn't going to get on the lifeboat, his wife said, "Well, if you're not going, I'm staying with you. We've been together this long."
Down.
So she gave her seat to the maid and gave her her fancy winter jacket. And so so the maid got off the ship.
Okay, so their relation to you then is?
Well, they were partners of his uncle.
Right. Okay.
So there was a department store in New York City called Abraham and Strauss, Strauss.
Right.
There were two sets of Strausses. There were the Strauss, who was his actual uncle and aunt. But then there were the Strauss that were business partners, but they also, the Strauss son, Percy Strauss, married Abraham's daughter, so they were intermarried as well as business partners.
Yes, Abraham was Herbert's first cousin.
So who was going to write all this down? Somebody?
Robin.
Eric is.
Eric and Robin.
Everybody pointed at everybody else.
RJ.
Yeah,
I know.
Somebody
please.
Help
Robin.
Me.
Robin. If you do anything else, we would love to have you either record this from the start and someone else would write it down.
Or we can start from the start right now.
We can start all over again.
We can record it right.
That's okay.
So let's do it. Let's do it right now.
We'll prompt you.
So Robin, tell us the story of your life. We only have 4 minutes.
The Reader's Digest version, please.
Reader's Digest version.
We have 6 minutes of recording time.
I'll put it in a nutshell.
All right.
No, we don't want the nutshell.
All right, ready, get set, go. You're on air.
I'm on air. A lot of hot air.
So what happened during World War II?
The Germans defeated the Americans at Normandy Beach.
That's what Donald said.
That's a good one.
We're entering the Twilight Zone now.
Oh my gosh.
I can't tell the same story twice.
Well, you know what? If you do it 3 times, we could blend it all together. Do it in segments, and then...
You heard it, so you write it down.
I can't remember it.
I can't either.
Probably the best one.
We should write down. Why don't you do that? You're not teaching now. You have time to do that.
You know,
I don't know what kind of time I have.
That's true. Okay.
Your relatives would love, love, love to see this written down.
Well, I think let's do it as a video. It would be better as a video just to get them to know what he did here.
What about my father's life?
That's book two.
That's what George tried to do with Deborah Jacoby.
What's that?
George made all those reel-to-reel tapes of Deborah Jacoby that we have buried someplace.
Well, I got the history of our family, which I got from Deborah and my father.
Right.
And I have
But he's done even more, but Eric has got...
You made some of the family in the office here.
Yeah, we have that.
And then I have the one, as much as I can find out from the family, from Deborah and my father, and I wrote that down. And that's as much as I could find. There was nobody else who gave any more information than I found in that. You want to see that? You've seen it.
We have a copy of that.
Yeah.
But we need your story.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Agree.
My story.
Your story.
My story.
Yeah. That's why it's called mystery.
Well, some people are interested in all that kind of thing. And Amy, my sister, was not interested in that at all. But George was, and I was.
What about Jane? Was she interested in it?
She kind of accepted what we told her. But between us both, we wrote down as much as we could about the family.
Uh-huh.
But it's interesting. It's an interesting family.
Yeah.
But some of the details that you told today about your life, on the ship, all of the details are really, really interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah. We'd love to see that. To be able to read it again, It's so hard to take in and...
But you have the history of the picket.
Yeah, we have the history of the picket. Is that on your website? Oh, no, what is that, on the Wikipedia?
It's just on Wikipedia.
Wikipedia.
That's written down. That's the name of the ship.
My experience in the military was very pleasant, very great. It was a great experience. Didn't have to fight, kill anybody.
Well, you didn't, but you were in harm's way. You were lucky you didn't hit any mines, but you could have.
Could have.
Yeah, and you were in danger. Yeah.
As you see, I'm still here.
Right. Well, that was great.
Jay was going to become an officer in the Air Force.
No?
Yeah.
Yes or no?
I was. I went through the officer candidate school or training or whatever, but I decided not to go to do it because I just didn't like it, so.
Mm-hmm. They promised him something which they didn't give him, and just on the day of graduation, he quit, dropped out of it. The day he was supposed to graduate.
Hasta la vista.
I'm from the Trump School of Aviation.
But he wanted to get into the space training. And they didn't give it to him. And he said, well, I quit the Air Force. All right?
Well, they said I didn't get the bases that I wanted to get assigned to, so I thought, this is ridiculous.
How long did you go? How long was the school?
I think it was I can't remember. It was either 30 or 90 days or something that. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. A little like my officer training school when I went to Chicago. Now you're all going to Chicago.
Yeah, we'll go see. We can see where you said it was at Northwestern, right?
A building called Abbott Hall where we were stationed. You probably find it. It's across the street from Lake Michigan. Mm. But that's part of Northwestern.
Yeah.
I'm kind of thinking that maybe John and I have to go because we have to yet check into our plane, Delta flights and all.
What's that?
We're going to have to hit the